Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 537, Science Faction, a startling scientific discovery.
How startling. Should I not change my adult diaper right now? Or am I going to make a mess on the floor if I change this thing at the wrong time and you drop the news?
If it's 50% full or more, then yeah, go ahead and change it. I'll hold off on breaking the news. If it is less than 50%, I know you get what they call magnum-sized adult diapers. So you are ready.
I don't like to brag, but I wear magnums.
I don't like to brag, but I shit myself in ways that you can't possibly imagine.
Have you ever seen like those cartoonish spit takes where like somebody will say something like that surprises the protagonist and all of a sudden they'll go, what? And they'll spit like a gallon of milk out of their mouth, but their hand blocks it.
Yes.
If my diaper is over 50% full and you were to surprise me, it would be a lot like that, but grosser, because it was with my
called
ass.
Called a shit take.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. I record in my closet. Everything needs to be washed now. Oh, my God.
This is like the worst fountain at the Bellagio.
I was getting married next week. That's my fiance's wedding dress. Oh, my God.
Oh, dear. And speaking of a soiled wedding dress, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great. Hey, could you think you could work in the wedding dress getting ruined into your speech, Bobby?
Listen, a lot of you might think, is this some kind of stylistic dress choice with brown splotches everywhere? And also, what is that red splotch in there as well? Let me tell you about Damian and his unhealthy anus.
Which one of you would be willing to pay weekend dry cleaning prices? Let me ask that before we judge this wedding dress.
Damien and his unhealthy anus sounds like the world's worst children's book.
It teaches anus health, though. You know, Bobby, there are a lot of ways that I could help the world. But if I could get one kid who otherwise would grow up with an unhealthy anus to change his habits young and have a Michael Phelps anus as an adult.
Oh, my God. Anyway, this is the free episode. This is not the Patreon episode. I feel like we have scared off. If anybody recommended the show to a friend on this specific episode, I'm so sorry. That person has already turned this episode off. They're like, I came here for some good quality science and maybe occasional, you know, old-timey comedian jokes. I didn't realize this was going to be a fecal blood parade.
Oh, you want old-timey jokes? Okay, a priest, a rabbi, and a bloody anus walk into a bar.
And the priest says, I did that.
By the way, if you are one of those people, welcome in, Bobby. The water's fine.
Well, except for all the shit and blood in it. Yes. Yeah,
there are a lot of people who knew that priest. And every time somebody listening to this show is like, ew, bloody anuses. I wanted science. You're making that person, that victim, that young childhood victim of the church, feel very self-conscious. So let's just stick out this episode, learn some science, and maybe learn some things about yourself along the way.
If you want to make it up to that kid, just subscribe. Maybe even join our Patreon and go ahead and do that.
Recommend us to a friend. I mean, let's just say, let's just say you're like, hey, you know what? That was a pretty good bloody anus joke, but I don't know if it's Patreon good.
Yeah.
Recommend us to a friend.
Tell a friend. That helps too, especially friends that like Patreon. Speaking of our patron, we solved last week's episode. All that stuff is going out. By the way, I would like to comment on this. I told everybody last week, and the story got even weirder, that I got a bunch of our Patreon mailouts back, our international mailouts. The national ones all seem to make it just fine. The international ones, I got like half of them back. So we have two listeners. I don't think they know each other. I won't say their names on air just in case they don't want me to say them. But we have two listeners who are from basically the same city in Canada. One of those things got returned and the other one went. It was the exact same postage, exact same stuff inside. Everything was identical. One came back and the other made it through. And it's not that it's coming back later. I know it made it through. I talked to this patron. It made it through. So what the fuck's going on, Postal Service? How did the exact same letter, was there a difference in the amount of ink used on the person's name that changed the weight? What the fuck could have made it where that one of those made it through and the other one came back? So I am convinced there is some kind of federal government conspiracy to keep science facts materials from going out of the country, because I got like almost half of our international stuff came back to me and I was just like, oh, that's my fuck up. I didn't put the right stamps on it. And then I realized that I put the exact same postage on everything. One of them made it through. I think it's like five blocks away from the other guy who did not get theirs.
Whenever this happens, I'm going to assume that one of our Patreons who lives in the city that got its package returned is actually a stereotypical animal from that city who's just a fan. For example, that fan who you didn't want to name was actually a moose. He doesn't have a residence.
Gotcha.
He can make an email, which means he can make a Patreon. So.
Yeah, he does have a cell phone, so he does everything from there, but he didn't have an address to send it to, so it just said Woods, and a postman, a Canadian postman, who I think is like an American postman, but he's like way nicer and less armed, he's he gets this big thing that says Woods, and he's like, well, I've been there, and I haven't seen this moose.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that he delivers a lot more handwritten letters and a lot less store advertisements.
Probably. Or they're better stores. I just feel like this Canadian's got it more figured
out. Not a single fucking Arby's coupon in this entire mail. Take that, U.S. Post Office.
Regardless, that went out this week. Technically, it got mailed out on Sunday, but because of the holiday, that means it actually won't physically leave the post office till Tuesday, but you guys internationally will get it. It has the right stamps on it now. You'll be fine. Blah, 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 blah. I still argue it had the right stamps on it before because half the people got them. But regardless, that is solved, and then pretty soon our next Patreon mail out will go, and hopefully that'll be much smoother. Those will be the t-shirts. All right, but for now, let's talk about and celebrate this week's patrons. Damien, will you take off with Elliot Dolce?
Hello, it is I, Carl Sagan. I am here with my partner, Andrew Yan, who is still amongst us in the living. I am tired, Bobby. Bobby, please take your hate mongering. I understand that me and Andrew's lifestyle offends you.
You keep trying to move Andrew Yan, who's a great science communicator herself and everything like that. You keep trying to turn her in to Andrew Yan, the guy who was a presidential candidate and is now running for mayor of New York City.
First off, a universal basic income has been one of Andrew Yan's main issues since we were in college together. It is why I fell in love with him. I like how you also took a G off of former presidential candidate Andrew Yang's name. To make your point about Andrew.
It's a silent G.
About with my husband, Andrew Yan. We're getting off track here, but I would like to say that Elliot Dolcery, you are wonderful. You sponsor scientists, and we had a wonderful florist named Dolcery at Andrew and I's wedding. If you are of any relation, then I know you are of fine company. Thank you, Elliot, for supporting this Patreon and science and the cosmos.
That was great, Carl.
No problem, Jerry Falwell.
Wait, what?
You hate gays. That's...
Oh, man. Carl Sagan hates me now. All right. Patron number two, Andy Parker.
Hi, Andy Parker here. It's me, Copernicus, not the QAnon shaman. I know that we sound a lot alike. And you deserve much better. You deserve, as a Patreon, you deserve a shout-out from a man who discovered a heliocentric model of the universe and was a real cut-up in the heavens. You don't deserve a shout-out for some QAnon guy. So, Andy Parker, thank you. You're a saint. You support science, and gosh darn it, we love you. And any time from this point out when you feel like somebody pinched your ass and there's nobody around, that was Copernicus.
Really? Copernicus is randomly sexually assaulting our patrons. Is that what you're saying?
It's not. You show me a law where it says the dead can't sexually assault patrons, and Copernicus will follow it. I'm a law-abider through and through.
First of all, there's many laws that say that. Second of all, I'm picking up on something here. This doesn't seem like Copernicus at all. You know what? It is the QAnon shaman pretending to be Copernicus to blame his sexual assaults on him.
Trump, I need a pardon. I sexually assaulted so many people. Trump, man, you leave office so soon. Please pardon me. So my dietary restrictions. A big dude's gonna grab my horns and use them and stand behind me.
Oh, dear. And lastly, and by the way, I'm gonna go ahead and say, I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm just gonna pronounce, like, what it says on your Patreon, but we'll call it Ziglastra.
I believe you're referring to Ziglastra, and Ziglastra and I go way back with Q. We're big into the whole QAnon. Ziglastra was actually the guy who predicted that Bobby would go back into the future, many years from now, and have Hitler on again on an episode of I Call BS, where you two would shit on Damien. Plus, Ziglastra is way ahead of the curve. Ziglastra talks through anonymous chat rooms in the Science Faction Patreon account. He talks anonymously, and he gives tips. I like to follow him.
Now tell me, Alex Jones, your relationship with this person, are they also a Sandy Hook denier? Because I feel like you're painting Ziglastra, who's a patron, in a bad light just by association with Mr. Jones. With yourself, sorry.
Absolutely not. In fact, Zinglestra understands that Sandy Hook was actually much, much worse, and actually got me to change my mind. Sandy Hook was actually a rehearsal for the lizard people who are looking for ways to defend their people in space against school shootings. Now, I actually added a lot onto that last part. Zinglestra didn't say that. But I have to believe that when Zinglestra told me that Sandy Hook was not an inside job, that was actually the ellipsis that Zinglestra, he or she, or perhaps a super intelligent sentient cat, wanted to say.
Part of me almost wants to start combating crazy conspiracy theories with crazier conspiracy theories. I got this idea from a good friend, a comedian, Dave Callens, who does something similar where he tries to up them a notch. So somebody's like, the earth is flat. And he'll be like, oh, you still believe in the earth, sheep? Okay, I get it. And like, so he'll go that way. And Sandy Hook's a bad one because there's like parents who lost kids and stuff. And so you don't want to fuck around with that one too much. But I almost do want to come back to those people at some point where like Sandy Hook didn't really happen. Those kids were crisis actors and they did it to take guns away because, you know, that was super effective. And it's like, you almost want to respond with like, oh, you think that's the story? Everybody knows that really those 30 kindergartners murdered that one dude who just innocently walked into a school in order, by the way, to boost gun sales. That's what they were trying to do.
So these kids all turned into zombies at the same fucking time. And this lone hero.
No, they were fucking leftists. And they decided.
Oh, they're Antifas?
They're going to take out Lanza so that.
Are you saying that this school was an Antifa secret indoctrination site? Hold on, Alex. Hello, goes on right here. Are you willing to go on the record here on Science Faction and say that Sandy Hook was actually an underground Antifa training site?
Yeah, think about it. And then...
Fair enough, all I need.
Then what happens? Then all of a sudden, we can pass more legislation to put more guns in schools, which is what they wanted, because Antifa secretly wants to collect all the guns so that they can go on a riot and kill all the white people.
I agree. Listen, I've been trying to get local Texas legislators, because if it can't be done in Texas, it can't be done, to actually have a gun mandate in schools, to have every child have an open carry permit. I'm going to be honest with you. It's been a hard push because of those fat cats in Austin. It's been a hard push. So I've actually gone to elementary schools all throughout the greater Austin area and just started burying guns because I need those kids to defend themselves.
You wouldn't believe how many Benedict Arnolds want to take away the Second Amendment right of kindergartners in this country. If you're old enough to be sentenced to death in Texas, you're old enough to carry a firearm.
Listen, libtard, John Hancock wanted my son to have a grenade. No, Your Honor, you're crazy.
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
I'm sorry, I was eating chili. I totally blacked out for a second. What was I talking about?
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, dire not wolves.
This is really bad for House Stark. They put a lot of money on this wolf thing.
Winter is coming indeed. So this is an incredibly interesting story. I was so excited when this broke. I could not wait to tape this episode to talk about it because we love fucking direwolves. We talk about direwolves all the time. They're part of that big Pleistocene megafaunal extinction at the Pleistocene-Holocene boundary where everything like mammoths, mastodons, you know, the horses that were here, the camels that were here, basically all the big animals in North America, or at least you shouldn't say all because, you know, American bison and a few others survived, but most of them went extinct.
The American obese human, which is now which is a 700-pound land manatee that is commonly found here. It did not exist then.
Yeah, it has dominated since. But direwolves are one of them, and they are super interesting. And basically, they look exactly like gray wolves in the fossil record, except bigger. They just look like a more jacked gray wolf. And so there's been thoughts, you know, did gray wolves evolve from them? Did they evolve from gray wolves? Was it a common ancestor between them and gray wolves? Could they interbreed? We've had people look around in the genetics of current living gray wolf populations to look for relatives of some inbreeding with direwolves. Their bones are so alike. Their skeletons are so alike that they're actually almost impossible to tell in museum collections, because if they're, you know, a juvenile direwolf, it looks the exact same as, you know, a gray wolf, and you can't really tell unless it's a size thing. And a small direwolf will look the same as a big gray wolf. And so a lot of paleontology museums will just label something wolf, and they won't even distinguish between the two because they can't.
They're dangerous to just crying that one specific thing. Eventually, nobody's going to believe those are bones at all.
Don't cry direwolf, though, because if you do that... statistically, at least one of your kids will be beheaded. One will be horribly sexually assaulted in repeated attempts.
Yeah, but she'll live.
One's gonna get crippled, but don't worry, he'll be magic.
You know what? Let's just don't cry dire wolf at all.
Yeah, don't ever cry dire wolf. Yeah, so we just assumed they were kind of like bigger gray wolves' cousins, but we knew they took down big animals. They were a mega hunter. They lived kind of where we live right now, Damien. We've found remains of dire wolves not too far from here, actually just coming within a few miles of where we are sitting right now. So like they are very much a part of this native environment. They could take down these giant animals, these giant horses and deer and moose and stuff. Some people have even theorized mammoth and mastodon, and they could break very thick bones at the center. They were just giant beastly wolves. And by the way, sometimes when I say like, oh, you know, 20% to 50% bigger than a regular gray wolf, people think, oh, all right, I know how big a wolf is. I've seen a dog. No, you don't. Wolves are fucking huge. Like if you ever go to a wolf reserve or something like that and go look at it, you will think you're looking at a dog that fucked a horse. You're like, what is this thing? I am used to dogs. I am used to a dog-sized creature. This is so much bigger than I imagined.
You would need something like a large Great Dane or an Irish wolfhound to simulate the size, but then it doesn't simulate that predatory nature and the fact that like this is the combat model. This is the what you have are the home models.
Yeah, wolves are like 6 feet long. They're terrifying, right? And then you imagine this thing that's bigger than them, and you're like, Jesus Christ. So we've talked about them a lot on this show for that reason.
Now, we know that like with a lot of creatures, like with humans and apes, gorillas, you know, they can only get so big. You know, their bone structure, one of the reasons they are so big is because that's just what their bone structure will allow. Like the liger is much bigger than the tiger, but it's too big to like really be effective. So what you're saying is this dire wolf is the supersized wolf, but it doesn't lose, it doesn't scale down. It's like a LeBron James as opposed to a Shaquille O'Neal.
Yes, exactly. Very good example. Yeah, it's from what we can tell, very fast moving, very large, could take down prey very well. Just a terrifying concept. And I want you to think about them. If you ever actually get to see a timber wolf in person, think about what a dire wolf would look like.
Were they pack hunters as well?
We don't know. We think. We don't know, though. And so we can't tell that necessarily from the fossil record. So we've talked about them on this show a bunch because I think they're interesting as shit. And a story just came out this week that blew dire wolves out of the water. Like everything we thought we knew about dire wolves are pretty much turned up on its head, including their name. Everything has to be changed because a very intrepid researcher finally was able to sequence some dire wolf DNA and found out
winter came.
Winter did come, but it wasn't in a wolf because these are not fucking wolves.
That's the wordplay you don't get on Star Talk.
These are not wolves. They look exactly like a timber wolf. Again, paleontologists in museums whose job it is to differentiate species of this time period cannot tell the difference if they are the similar size between dire wolves and gray wolves. That's how similar their skeletons are. And yet, these things are not related. They are incredibly distantly related, I guess you could say, but they are not at all. In fact, not only are they not wolves, not only are they not related to the gray wolf or timber wolf or anything like that, they're not wolves. They're not related to dogs. We know wolves and dogs are closely related. They're not related to coyotes. They're only distantly related to even distant canines we know of, like jackals. And they split off from basically all the other canines we know, dogs, coyotes, jackals. They split off from all of these 6 million years ago, basically the same difference between us and chimps. And they're their completely own species, probably completely own genus, just a totally different thing we have never seen and doesn't have any living relatives around. But they look exactly like wolves because of convergent evolution, meaning just like other animals that evolve, like crabs are a great example. Crabs, like things that look like crabs, have evolved numerous times in history. They're not related to each other or closely related. It's just a very efficient body type. This is like one of the most amazing examples of convergent evolution where they've almost become the exact same creature. One is slightly bigger, but they've almost become the exact same creature from very different creatures, and they actually likely went extinct because they evolved, you know, somewhere around here. And then basically when wolves and dogs and stuff came in maybe 20 some odd thousand years ago into North America, they probably outcompeted them. And then when you had the Pleistocene extinction, then the wolves and coyotes and those things could survive on smaller game, whereas the dire wolf was big and really did require large game and couldn't survive.
So what you're saying is the wolf, the American wolf, the North American wolf, they did the Price is Right $1. Like the wolf came in and said, it takes this many calories to sustain a mammal of this size. And the wolf came in and said, I can do it for $1.
Went under, though. They went under instead of over. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so the story of how this happened is amazing. You have this researcher who's going around, and this is like the mid-20 teens. They're going around 2014, 2015, 2016. And they're basically driving from major museum to major museum across the United States looking to gather direwolf DNA because we had none. Keep in mind, we have thousands of direwolf bones. A huge percentage of them come from the La Brea Tar Pits, not too far from where we are, but up in LA. And we have perfectly preserved thousands of direwolf bones. And yet the tar was essentially so hot that it baked away or boiled away all the usable, gatherable DNA, and we couldn't get any DNA from it. And then because the specimens are so like gray wolves, we didn't have enough specific direwolf specimens that were in the good enough shape to pull DNA out of any of those. And so this researcher basically went around and went, fuck, we need to figure out what these things look like. We need to figure out what they're related to. We need to figure out how this works. When did they separate from gray wolves? And they went around to the US, like in their car, driving around collecting bones, and were able to pull out 5 direwolf DNA sequences from between 13,000 and 50,000 years ago. And they then sequenced them. They compared them to modern canids, and they found that it's just not a wolf. It's not even close. It's a completely separate, extinct group of canines that's separated from the lineage of wolves, dogs, coyotes, and jackals more than 6 million years ago. That's fucking crazy. What an amazing thing to learn about something that looks exactly like that. It would kind of be like figuring out we find a population of humans and they're like, they're average of like 5'4" or something as opposed to an average of 5'8". And then we later find out they're a completely different species. They're not human beings at all. They were separated by 6 million years. They only look kind of like us. They evolved from chimps a long time ago someplace else. You'd be like, what? What are you talking about? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
But how big were their dongs, Bobby? Tell the people what they want to know. Were we the bigger? Were we the dire wolves? Or were we the wolves?
This is interesting because it actually forces direwolves out of their genus. So they're in the canid genus right now, canid diurus or something like that. They can't be in there anymore because they're not in that. They're not the same as a dog or a wolf or anything like that. So they actually are thinking about bringing back an old genus idea that they had originally put direwolves in a long time ago. Bringing that back is a whole different genus species thing. Very, very interesting on that front. It also just shows the power of convergent evolution. And convergent evolution is where two species will evolve towards basically the same end or similar functions at the end, but they don't necessarily share a close relatedness. Now, a good example also happened to a canid-like shaped animal that has no relation to dogs, which would be thylacine, also known as the Tasmanian tiger or Tasmanian wolf, which also, like the last time it shared an ancestor with something that looked like a dog, both of those things look like a shrew, basically. But this thing looks, and the last one went extinct in the 1920s. You can actually see some old film reel of it in a couple pictures. It looks like a dog with like a slightly longer snout that can open its mouth wider, but it looks exactly like a dog. If you saw it running around, you'd just be like, look at that weird looking dog. And yet it hadn't shared a relationship with dogs or wolves since they both look like mice. So this was another example of convergent evolution, which is always a really neat thing to see because you can see how Mother Nature can kind of...
Well, Mother Nature favors dogs and crabs. That's what we've learned. Mother Nature favors dogs and crabs. It's not like everything's becoming a rat.
That's true. There are a lot of rat-like things, though, so I don't know.
Mother Nature likes you, dog. Doesn't like you, crab.
It's amazing to me what evolution can do and the fact that they could come. It's almost like that old saying, like you could put 100 monkeys on a typewriters for long enough and they type Shakespeare, you know, and it's like Shakespeare came up with it and this random monkey punching away will come up with it too. It's almost like Mother Nature does that with convergent evolution. Like she's going to type the same book twice using totally different methods of getting there, but it ends up being the same thing.
Maybe wolf is just a more necessary, like you don't get a lion everywhere, but like a wolf is just, it's a much easier code. You need that. And
well, you have marsupials, saber-toothed, you know, things that looked kind of like cats that when we're in Australia that filled those roles as well, you know, but they had no relation to felines at all. So same thing. It's just convergent evolution.
Could you argue that with our earlier ancestors, not Homo, just, you know, an earlier version of Homo, could they have filled the same niche as a wolf? Just a pack hunter who hunted during the day?
Just followed us? Oh, no, I guess it'd be a dog.
Walked on all fours?
Yeah. Really spent a lot of quality bro time together.
Yeah, and you'd mount a bro if you, just to get him. Yeah. Sometimes just to get him in line, or he had a great ass.
Yeah, either way.
Anyway, super, super interesting. Most exciting direwolf story you will hear all year. That's my science faction guarantee. Super, super cool.
That's a bold statement, Bobby. You sure? Sure you want to hang your hat on that one, Bobby?
I do.
Okay.
I will bet you all of Damien's stuff that this is the most exciting direwolf news story of the year.
I stop podcasting right now. Go out and find the scientist. We got to fit this direwolf scientist. We need a sequel, and it needs to be better than the original. Bobby's going to ruin me.
All right. Really quickly, we'll get into article number two. We won't spend too much time on it. I was too jacked up on direwolf news. I'm still buzzing about that. Can't spend too much time on this. But the most ancient black hole discovered is bigger than we thought possible. So this is a good story out of Science News, and it looks at a supermassive black hole that we found that is astronomically large and way bigger than we thought
possible.
It
actually shares many of the same physics as your fat mama.
Yeah, it's true. In fact, it jumped up into the universe and got stuck. You guys already probably know what a black hole is. It's a collapsed star that is basically an infinite point of density. And so the mass of an entire star gets pushed down into one small point, and then that point becomes incredibly dense and it pulls everything into it. And then the horizon of the black hole, which we can actually kind of make out, is the space in which light cannot escape. And so therefore, there's literally just this black dot. Now, that's just a regular black hole. At the center of each galaxy is what's called a supermassive black hole that basically the galaxy seems to rotate around. And these are gigantic, huge black holes that are many times larger than normal ones. And we think they may have something to do with universe formation. We're not 100% sure of where they came from or how they came to be, et cetera, et cetera. But they're a very interesting part of cosmological research, especially in the last 20 some odd years, because their gravity is so important to the projections of how things work and kind of figuring out the mystery of dark energy and stuff, like, you know, what's pushing apart, if these are pulling in, that kind of thing. So they become a very interesting point for astronomers to look at.
Your mama is so fat that she outweighs the needs of the many. That's a Vulcan fat mama joke.
Yeah. Wow. I like how you delivered it deadpan too. That's how they would do it.
Well, all of their Vulcan sidekicks would do the, oh, right behind them. But yeah, that's the only time you're allowed to show Vulcan emotion. It's when roasting somebody after a burn.
No, I think the Vulcan version of that is just one guy going,
Indeed.
So this newly discovered supermassive black hole is about 2 times larger and 20 million years older than the previous record holder. It's about 1.6 billion suns of mass, which is just an unbelievable thing to think of, and lies at the heart of a galaxy that's more than 13 billion light years away from Earth. So basically, literally, the other side of the universe, if you guys can imagine that.
3 yo mama circumferences.
Yeah, and we think it goes back to when the universe was only about 670 million years old, which is hard to kind of make the numbers work, because if it's that big and that old and it grew as fast as possible, it would have had to have a starting mass that's way bigger than anything that we are comfortable with starting masses being for these type of things, something like 10,000 suns. So because of that, it kind of has this inherent mystery. How can this thing be this big and this old? The way that we know that these black holes start do not fit these equations. And when we get back to it, the numbers don't seem to work. So we're not 100% sure how this happened or where it came from or what the explanation is behind this. I don't even know why we shouldn't even just call it the supermassive black hole. We should just call it the biggest thing we know about, because it is the biggest single thing we know of. And it could have formed through, some astronomers think it could have formed through the direct collapse of huge amounts of just hydrogen gas in the primordial universe. Or it could have started out like small, and it could have started out like smaller or like just the regular way black holes start out. But something happened that means that black holes grow a lot faster than we think they do. Because again, we haven't exactly had billions of years to observe them growing. We just kind of had the math to do it.
Bitten by radioactive dark matter?
I wonder, so if you got bitten by radioactive dark matter, would you just constantly cause a force on other people but not be seen?
You'd be this massive force you'd exert on anybody else, but like they'd look at you, I'm not doing anything. Yeah, I'm taking up a ton of mass in this universe, but
they couldn't see or find you. They could just see your wake. You would basically be Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense. And Haley Joel Osment would be radio telescope astronomers. Boom! Made the analogy work.
Thank you. Everybody, you want to go see dead people, become an astronomer. That's the lesson.
I see dead stars.
Yes, it's very probable. Nobody is surprised by this.
All right. First of all, that is a fucking brilliant Sixth Sense mixed with black hole joke that if you want to get, you have had to sit through some very unbrilliant bloody feces jokes. That is the irony of that particular joke. There is only a select group of fans and people in the earth who are willing to sit through the bloody feces joke and will get that black hole joke.
Bobby, there are children who grow up in countries that pray for the privilege to listen to science podcasts with bloody feces jokes.
Yeah, ever since that guy in Tiananmen Square protested the Chinese takedown of bloody feces science-based jokes.
Wait, okay, Bobby, what if we became the official podcast of China? I will kiss the Communist Party's ass for that audience.
We can just declare that we did. I mean, who's going to stop us? They only speak Chinese, right? They're not going to hear us do it, so it'll be fine.
I know, Bobby. My Cantonese is pretty rusty because true. I don't know it.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 537, where you learned all about an incredibly interesting fact about direwolves and how the most ancient black hole in the universe is bigger than we thought possible. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back later this week for Science Faction 538.
So clearly there was feces and blood on the bride's dress. But what's harder to see because of the color of the dress is the semen. Hi, I'm Robert Timothy. I'm going to be your best man for today. I met the couple.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.